Hello everyone, Mark Green here. You've probably noticed it's a bit of a shorter episode this week. We had some real audio problems during Space Arc, so unfortunately there's no Space Arc section this week. So we'll do survival horror games on next week's episode. So if any of you haven't got your survival horror picks in for Space Arc, send them in and we can squeeze them into next week's episode. Sorry, we won't be travelling into the year 3000 this week. And while I'm here, just to say on the a cappella game tunes bit later on, there is some kind of confusion about what the first song was. So you'll probably listen to it and go, huh, that song doesn't seem to match up to what the guy was singing. If you go to our website, we've worked out which song it should have been, what the name of the actual song was, so you can see what that was there. Well, I hope you enjoy the episode, and see you soon. Hello and welcome to episode 8 of The Rotating Platform, a podcast about video games. It's the 18th of November 2014 and I'm Mark Green and with me is Alan Madrill.
Hello.
And Matthew Castle.
Hello.
Who has presumably recovered from the 28 hours of sleep deprivation.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Feeling better now.
I listened to last week's podcast and I didn't really remember any of it. I was like, I can't believe I tried to put Wii Music on the Space Arc. What was I thinking?
You had the best podcast experience of any of us in that respect. Hey, I just want to say before we get cracking that we have a lot of lovely tweets and emails from our loyal listeners. So I just want to say thanks for that. And in particular, I had a nice email from Banjo Guy Ollie. Do you remember him? From episode 2 or 3.
Is that the guy who plays Turrican or something on the banjo?
Turrican, that's right. 2 on the banjo, yeah. Banjo Ollie, yeah.
Absolutely. So he sent us a very nice email thanking us for the mention. thanks, Ollie.
Yeah.
Yeah, go and check him out on the YouTube. He's got his own album and stuff. He plays all kinds of video game tunes using the power of a banjo.
Using the power of the banjo.
Yeah.
The unlimited power of the banjo.
Yeah, he just keeps going. There's a little bit of a... like a little pipe as well he sometimes plays, so you get everything, banjo and pipe, the full range of instruments. So I can see a huge network of interconnected platforms ahead of us, like giant cogs in a frightening machine. We should take a leap forward onto the first platform, but first this.
And so as the platform rotates in front of us, we find ourselves on a platform where we have to tell you 100% new, exciting things that are true. And this week they're going to be about the exciting new video game Assassin's Creed Unity, recently released for more or less every platform there is.
That's right, and these are certified 100% true.
Yep, I've looked these up. I looked these up on the government website, gov.uk. To find them out if whether they were true or not, and they are apparently. So there you go.
Wow.
Oh, I didn't know they had a fact checker for video games.
Yeah, there's a whole Assassin's Creed Unity bit. Who knew?
I held down the president of Ubisoft, Yves Guillemot, and forced him to tell me some secrets. So,
yeah,
great.
Never trust a man named after a bird.
What other men don't you trust in that regard?
Hang on, John Bird.
yeah,
frantically thinking of more.
Tony Hawk,
Robin Williams.
Oh man, that's harsh.
That's one off your list, though.
Bob Crow. Oh, I know. Taylor Swift.
Very nice.
Yes. Also, just the Penguin from Batman.
Oh, yeah, don't trust that dude.
No, he's evil.
Who, Who wants to kick off with some 100% verified facts?
Yeah, so this is about Assassin's Creed Unity, or just about things in Assassin's Creed Unity.
Just things, really, isn't it?
Just things.
You know, just some things.
Matthew, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, so here's something you didn't know about Assassin's Creed Unity. In one of the more controversial levels, Arno travels to the outskirts of Paris to Euro Disney, where he must assassinate Mickey Mouse.
It's got to be trademark problems there. But
no, it's fully licensed, I think, isn't it?
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Okay. In some of the original concept, it's called Assassin's Creed Unity, so they thought they'll kind of try and remove some of the conflict from the game, make it more sort of peaceable type thing. So originally, when you were going to come up behind someone and stab them in the neck, you didn't stab them, you give them a nice cuddle, surprise cuddle from behind, so they get all sleepy and have a nap.
Oh, that's nice.
It's nice, isn't it?
I've got another fact for you. In the game, it's possible to murder someone with a French stick of bread, at which point you unlock an achievement or trophy wittily named Violence Begets Violence.
Nice.
Pure pun. Pure 100% pun.
Oh, I only just got that. That's a pun.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Did you think of the pun and then try and reverse engineer? Like, I could see that was a joke that started at the end, and then you thought, how can I write bread? Yeah.
Fact, you meant, Alan. Fact, not joke.
Facts. I mean, that's how the facts work.
Facts, yeah.
Talking of facts, a lot has been made of how all of the crowds, all the members of the crowd scenes are kind of acting independently, and there's so many of them, and, you know, they're kind of not treated like one block of people. But they're so independently minded that in an earlier build of the game, there was a serious bug with people just daydreaming. You know, they'd just kind of get lost in their own thoughts, mostly thinking about what to have for dinner.
That's kind of creepy. This kind of really freaked me out.
They're just like...
So, there's I'm sure you guys know this already, but there's a change to the famous leaps of faith in Assassin's Creed Unity. Normally, you'd get the eagle soaring around the top of the tower, and it would emit its famous cry as you leapt off. Well, now, instead of that, the eagle meets you at the bottom of the tower and hands you a complimentary chocolate. So surprising, but rather lovely change to the game.
Another fact is that despite having the most advanced parkour moveset of any Assassin's Creed hero, Arno still can't do the monkey bars without messing up.
Obviously, the game involves the aristocracy and a period of French history where the people were rising up, and exploring kind of left-wing politics is a very sort of fruitful area for Assassin's Creed. So there were some alternative titles of the game which they decided not to go with in the end, but I've got a list of them here. Assassin's Creed, Anarcho-syndicalism in the post-enlightenment capitalist dystopia. That's one.
Yeah.
Assassin's Creed, health and safety in the workplace. And there was also an earlier version of the Assassin's Creed game where you would play as the late Labour Minister Tony Benn.
Oh, I wonder when that got changed. So, as you know, Assassin's Creed sometimes gives us real historical figures to meet. Leonardo da Vinci, right, in Assassin's Creed 2, Machiavelli.
So because Marquis de Sade this time, right?
Well, yeah, and also some other famous figures from French history in Assassin's Creed Unity to meet and get missions from. Inspector Clouseau. D'Artagnan from D'Artagnan and the Three Musketeers. And Jean-Luc Picard. All appearing in Assassin's Creed Unity.
You know, it's funny you should mention that, Mark, because other famous historical French people included in the game include Pepe Le Pew, René from Allo Allo, and Carla Bruni.
It's all true.
Oh, were there any more French names left on the Wikipedia page of fictional French characters that you picked out, Matthew?
Just in case.
My next fact... is that there's a bonus stage set inside the musical Les Miserables. where you must use the cast's bellowing musical crescendos to disguise the sound of Arno firing a cannon into an evil butcher.
That's freaky, because I found the same fact involving Anne Hathaway and Hugh Jackman doing a lovely duet.
Amazing.
Amazing.
My very last fact is that the game has a very literal take on eagle vision, in that it not only lets you pick out targets, but also small woodland creatures and prime nesting spots. It's cool. Really weird, but, you know, Eve's wanted it in.
My final fact is that, unfortunately, the game has had some frame rate issues and other technical issues, but not many people know the reason for this. It's because of Ubisoft's insistence on using 18th century hardware to write it with.
For that added authenticity.
Yeah. So really go to town on the detail.
Those fools. Why didn't they think?
Well, I don't know about you, but I feel much more informed after these series of facts. And yeah. I feel like I know things. I can go out into the world and speak with confidence about Assassin's Creed Unity.
I can't believe how much of this stuff I didn't see when I was playing it.
You just got to pay attention, Mark. That's the thing. You just got to pay attention.
I guess.
Oh, but now this.
Well, it's all platforms around here, isn't it? Platform after platform after platform.
That's what they say.
And here's another platform. So this one's got very strange music emanating from its surface.
Oh my! Yes.
I think this might be the a cappella game tunes platform.
Oh.
Where sweet. We try and recognise game tunes from that are just created through human voice. The human voice box and nothing else.
Yep. Mm.
So I've got some from one of our listeners this week from Balladeer. He's done three, and so shall we try and recognise them one by one?
Yeah.
How about that? Okay, let's try the first one. This one's called Audio Upbeat. Dum dum da 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 dum dum da dum da 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 dum.
I don't know, I quite like it though, whatever it is.
It does ring a bell somewhere, like...
Sounds very familiar.
Is it quite old? Feels like it could be. It feels like it should be on strings, you know? Like,
I have no idea. Like, is it a Mario and Luigi thing, maybe?
I think we've been beaten.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze. What? Well, I haven't played that yet, so...
Matthew,
you must have played that. Deep. He says it's Deep Keep. Here it is.
Sounds like Monkey Island. Yeah.
Hmm. I hope he hasn't mismatched the song to the
floor. Yeah. The next one is just that. We'll be like
that. Yeah. So we failed on that one. We failed. Let's try another one. This one's called Audio Percussive.
I'm enjoying it a lot.
I've got no idea.
I have not. I'm assuming it's quite a fast moving thing, so it's going to be like a boss theme or a chase theme.
Yeah, F-Zero again, maybe?
Yeah.
I was thinking something racing-y.
We're going to be stumped again, aren't we?
I'm hopeless.
It says here, outside of Mount Pyre in Pokemon Ruby, Sapphire, or Emerald.
What?
What? Get out of here.
I wouldn't know a Pokemon theme if, like, a freaking Pikachu came up to me and sang it.
Here it is.
Well, you did a good job, actually.
Yeah, if I'd ever heard that song, I would recognise that, but I've never heard it.
Wow. Well sung, though. Well sung.
It's very well sung.
Quite a challenging choice, really, when you think about that. How
it is hard.
Do that?
That's a rendition worthy of Smooth McGroove.
Yeah, or Banjo Gaioli.
Or Banjo Gaioli.
Used his voice rather than a banjo. Right, one more then on current standing.
Oh, God, this is totally humiliating.
Well, this one says audio lyrics, so perhaps there'll be some lyrics to give us a clue. Here we go. Halo. Oh, no, maybe not.
Oh, this is... I think this is Last Story.
Ah.
Da 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 da. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. It's either Last Story or it's Xenoblade. I can't remember. I listened to both soundtracks quite at the same time. So.
Okay. Should we plump for that? Yeah. I'm not sure.
I think it's Last Story.
Well, I got to tell you, Matthew, you're right.
Yeah.
It's The Flying One, or Toboro Mono. Let's just have a listen.
Flying to the stars, you can be far away.
Oh, you get the idea of that.
Yeah, that was a good rendition. I recognised it.
Good. 1 out of 3. 1 out of 3, guys. That's not great.
Oh, it's better than I would ever do on my own. I'm ballast in this scenario.
But what, better than you would do if you were singing yourself songs? Oh, I see what you mean. If it was just you.
If it was just me guessing. Identifying all of these, no chance at all.
Anyone got any from any team, any rotating platformers, got any songs to sing?
Well, I've got... As I mentioned on the last podcast, I've been playing a lot of San Andreas, and I have a few choice tunes from the wonderful San Andreas soundtrack, which I can perform for your listening pleasure, if you like.
I cannot wait. What the heck is that?
I don't know, but it's made me feel really weird inside. I think Alan just hypnotised us. What do you want us to do, Master?
I want you to listen to Crazy by Willie Nelson.
Oh, that my version of God.
What?
That is a truly sinister...
I want you to listen to it as well, because it definitely doesn't sound like that.
Well, I can't. Matthew, you got any?
I know, because every time I do them, everyone kicks off, because I'll inevitably rely on my...
You go, dicky, dicky, dicky.
Exactly, yeah. And then everyone's
dicky,
like...
Dicky, dicky, dicky. Yeah. So if anyone out there in listener land has any wants to sing us a song and email it to us as an MP3 file... and challenge us to guess the game it's from, then do so, please. And do include the name of the song so we can know if we're right. If you attach it in a text file, then that will mean I don't spoil it for myself when I open the email. So email us at trp@therotatingplatform.com, and we look forward to filling our ears with your audio nightmares from your mouth. but before we do that, this...
And so our feet crunch down on a new platform, and it is a platform covered with many exciting different games. Oh. And they are all games that we have been playing, I believe.
So we're crushing games we've been playing underfoot.
Well, yeah, they're like discs, but they're all familiar to
they
us.
Just get all...
There's Well, there's going to have to be, like, we're going to talk about three games, aren't we? So there's going to be lots of copies of these
three
games.
Is that how it works, is it?
It's going to work like that.
The platform is just filled with thousands of copies.
Or it's all the games we've ever played and are ever going to play, and we're just sort of picking them up as we go along.
A very magical thought.
Oh, man.
But to get us back on topic, Alan, what have you been playing?
I've been playing a little game called The Last Door Brackets Collector's Edition.
Oh, yeah, I've played that.
Yeah, oh, did you play it when it was on PC?
I think I played a one-level demo of it a while ago that was free.
It's episodic, and it's... I've only played the beginning sections of it, because it's heavy, heavy, heavy on tension. So, well, I'm glad that you've only played that much, because I don't want you to spoil it for me, because it's heavy, heavy, heavy on the tension and the whole mystery as you're trying to find out what's happened.
Yeah.
If you don't know it, it is a point-and-click adventure... it's not even really a classic retro style-y. It has graphics similar to stuff like Full Throttle and those classic LucasArts type games, Beneath the Steel Sky.
Oh,
that sort
good
of
name
era.
Drop. I love Beneath the Steel Sky. I love it.
It's a wonderful game. But I'd say actually it's a little bit more blocky even than that. A sort of fewer pixels being used to show the action. It's used as a, like, it's horror. It's 8-bit horror, which is a weird genre when you think about it. Like, using these blocky, very minimal characters to set up tension and spookiness and things. It's quite an unusual thing to do.
Yeah.
But it's pretty much straight up point and click, which I'm not a massive fan of because, you know, I always have this problem with point and click things is how do you work out what is going to be interactive on screen. And games have handled this in different ways, like The Walking Dead. You can turn on little sort of indicators of as to what you can interact with and what you can't, or you can turn those off. But now that I'm playing this on a tablet, if I want to find something that you can interact with, my main way of doing this is to, like, wipe my finger all over the screen to see what shows up as, like, an icon.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, whether it turns
out. That's how detectives solve murder scenes as well.
Just wipe their hands all over.
Yeah, everything. Until they just get a feeling.
It has a weird, weird opening, right? Which is what kind of caught my
attention
in the first place.
Oh, yeah, this is, yeah.
Yeah,
I remember
the
it.
Opening is where it's sort of teaching you the mechanics of the game. It doesn't really need to teach you very much. It's like just teaching you how to find things to interact with and tapping on them. Is your this character, Anthony DeWitt, and you hang yourself. That's the opening of the game.
Yeah.
Serious. Very, very odd game. And then the rest of the action, it cuts to this other character who's trying to work out why this person did this thing.
So this is my big question about The Last Door, right? Because... that's what everyone talks about. That's what I remember. The character hangs himself at the start. Is that the reason people are talking about this? Does the rest of the game...
No, I don't think it is. No, I think
to live up to the kind of shock and promise of that moment?
I think it's strong on the sense of mystery and horror. It's pretty spooky as a game. The soundtrack is something else. Beautiful music and sort of, you know, distant wind and crows and...
the sound of the noose tightening.
Well, you do hear the little creak of the chair and stuff. It's really, you know, it's quite creepy. Mm. And there's a lovely bit where you find an old broken gramophone, which at the time when the game is set is like a wonderful new piece of technology that the main character has never seen before. So he's like, oh, what's this? And he finds a record or a recording, puts it on the, and you obviously put it on the gramophone, but it's stuck. And it, like, loops around.
Oh, yeah.
It's really... it builds the tension. It's a horrible thing.
Oh, wow.
So the soundtrack is something else.
Great.
And it's apparently inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, which I don't want to know anything more about why that should be, you know?
Yeah.
And whether Cthulhu's going to turn up and rip my head off. I don't want to know about that.
That's the second level starts with Cthulhu slowly hanging himself.
Oh, man.
Everyone's like, oh, Jesus. This is so grim. Even so, the unnamable horror is killing itself.
That sounds true. Yeah, I can't remember very much. I remember, you're in a mansion, aren't you? And I remember going, just popping in and out of rooms. not.
Yeah, it's quite. You know how most room explorer-y type games, you have a hub area and then all the little rooms come off it, right? In this one, it's like the layout of the house. If you want to go back, you have to backtrack sometimes through three or four different rooms to get back to the room you're trying to get to, which is a little bit of a faff.
Yeah.
I kind of prefer it where there is a central hub because you're forming a mental model of that of that mansion it takes a little bit longer than I'm used to with this sort of game. I don't want to have to be thinking about how to get to such and such a room.
So you mentioned it's episodic. Are all the episodes out?
The episodes, I believe, are out. Yes, because they're on to season two now. Yes, there a season two of The Last Door, which presumably is the really, really last door. But they're released episodically, and it's like two quid something for each episode.
Yeah, I'm going to check that out then, because I do remember getting a creepy feeling.
It's nicely written. It's quite atmospheric. I'll play a bit more. I'm only at very early stages of it, so I'll play a bit more and see whether I'm going to be tempted enough to unlock future episodes. We'll see.
So can I talk about my game now?
Yeah, why not?
My game is Borderlands, the pre-sequel.
Oh.
Which came out a couple of months ago now?
About a month ago. Yeah.
So I'm a big Borderlands fan. And actually, I think the pre-sequel, even I had kind of low hopes, if that even makes sense. For it. I think it's kind of way better than it has any right to be, really. I'm really enjoying it. I think it's really good. So
It's better than it has a right to be.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Because I think Borderlands is a bit of a love it or hate it kind of game. Or at least I was really turned off by it when before I'd played it, because the art style is kind of very brash and sort of nasty looking. Actually, it's a very intelligently written funny game with, and the mechanics, the shooting, the loot and everything is brilliant. So when I first played Borderlands 2, I was like, oh, this is... It genuinely, became one of my favourite games. And the pre-sequel looked like a kind of a rehash. It's set in space. It has, a mechanic where when you're outside, you lose health if you don't get between oxygen bubbles. It has floaty space jumping, and so all of this stuff, I think when I saw this, I thought, oh, really? This ain't gonna work.
So were you thinking kind of, oh, they've just put it in space?
Yeah, I did just
run out of better ideas.
It wasn't being done by the main development team. It's been done by 2K Australia.
Yeah, Australia. Yeah.
So I was just like, oh. And so I put off buying it for a couple of weeks. And actually, I love it. I think it's really, really good. I mean, there's obviously a lot of stuff is borrowed from Borderlands 2. But the space stuff is really good, actually. Just the really high floaty jumping. You jump really high from the outset because it's all set on the moon. And then with your oxygen tank, if you hold down the jump button, you kind of slow your descent. So you can do these massive slow motion jumps across levels, which is actually really satisfying and really good. The oxygen mechanic is fine because every enemy drops oxygen. So you very, very rarely run out of oxygen. But it does lend the game a kind of, because when you're outside and you've got this helmet on, and you're kind of doing these kind of that you're running at a normal speed, but you're the bouncing of the character shows you're doing kind of moon jumps, and the sound is muffled when you're outside, and there's this kind of spooky sort of science fictiony theremin-esque kind of music playing. It's got loads of really good laser guns. I think laser guns are really hard to get right in games. They're quite often very loose, very weedy feeling and sounding. They're really good and really satisfying. The enemies are really, really interesting to kill. They're all kind of doing these real... When they dive now, because they're diving on the moon, they literally swoop about 20 meters off in one direction. So it makes it much more challenging to keep track of them. And when they die, their bodies are floating. There's a really good grenade I got. I don't know if it's one of the default ones, but it's like the grenade, you throw it, it floats up into the air and then explodes as fireworks and kills anyone who's underneath it. and all the bodies all go just floating and spinning off. So I did it with this happened in Borderlands 2 as well, maybe Borderlands 1, I haven't played one, but enemies driving around in kind of jeeps and, you know, buggies, and so these enemies were just bothering me, so I threw this firework grenade, and literally they were just flung. I was at the top of a hill, like miles off into the distance by this grenade, and just were like spinning and just floating far away. It's not only coded by 2K Australian, all the characters, the moon is Australia, basically. So all the characters and everything is Australian accents, all referencing Australia, which is actually really nice and very refreshing. So that's a long list of things that I think is like awesome about the pre-sequel. I'm really glad I bought it.
I've not played it myself, but one of my colleagues who reviewed it for us, Joe, so it's got, like, apparently there's some gun in it that fires, like, Australian in swear words, like insults. Like, every time it shoots, the gun itself has, like, got an AI in it, and it's, like, this sort of foul-mouthed Australian thing. And he was, like, he ran it past his... he ran it past his dad, who was sort of originally from Australia, and he said he was incredibly impressed at the sort of, variety and, fidelity so of this Australian slang.
He's saying
slang.
Stuff right. like your flaming galah and stuff
yeah,
like
that kind
right?
of stuff, yeah.
Definitely. Is it? Is there enough that's different that, you know, other than the whole spacey thing?
Well, it's just that Borderlands is a very satisfying game to play. So, no. I mean, the jumping and everything gives it a different feel. But... you know, all the enemies are new, it's not. It shouldn't be too different. This is what I realise now, having bought it and played it. I just wanted more things to kill and more loot, and that's what I got. Oh, and it's really good when you're in space now, when you're in an oxygenless environment, when you open a loot box rather than opening like a normal crate, because of the pressure differential, it pops off, poof, the lid pops off, poof, and all the loot kind of floats around you. That is... very satisfying, and I never tire of it.
That's a sign of a good mechanic, isn't it? Where the actual world itself is satisfying like that. That's a nice... I like that.
Yeah, I think they genuinely have put much more care into it than I think probably people would have expected when they first heard about it. It's and I think it's a bit... it's like Saints Row, you know? When Saints Row 4 came along very quickly after 3, people were like, oh, here we go. It's just, you know, and it's set in this virtual reality, and it's just to kind of knock it out, get it out quickly. And actually, it was a great game in its own right. And yeah, I think the pre-sequel is very similar. Right, who's next?
Who else is here?
Oh, yes,
Matthew. Hey!
I have been playing, not masses of, because it's only just out now, but I've been playing a bit of Far Cry 4.
Who doesn't love Far Cry?
I don't trust anyone who doesn't like Far Cry.
That's right.
Yeah, that and people named after birds. Yeah. Forget about it.
Like, wait.
John Cut Raven?
Yeah. Bob Eagle? Is that a person?
I don't know.
Sounds right.
Oh, Eddie the Eagle Edwards. There you go.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, but I do trust him.
Really?
Yeah. He's probably trustworthy.
Never trust a man who changes his own chin. Far Cry.
Far Cry.
Ah, exciting.
Yes.
Please tell us it's good, Matthew.
For what I've played of it, it's great. I think that, to me, like, you know, I love open world games, and I think, you know, the idea of the kind of, the massive... go and explore this huge environment is kind of like the ultimate version of kind of what sort of games... Well, when I was younger, I thought that was the ultimate version of what games could be, you know, the idea of all that space. But as time has gone on, people seem to have just used it to build, like, cities, endless cities, and that's fine. Like, I love exploring cities, but Far Cry, I think they genuinely give you somewhere, like, really different to go and really different to explore, you know, the tropical islands and all that. And this one is sort of set in I don't really know what the area is meant to be. I mean, it's called Kirat. It's sort of...
Kirat. It looked like Nepal to me.
It's kind of, yeah, it's kind of got that vibe. There's sort of elephants everywhere and the mount, you know, these sort of amazing sort of snow sort of tipped mountains, whichever direction you look in. And it's just, it's one of the first things I've kind of played, you know, on the next gen, where I've really, you know, you really look at it and go, oh yeah, wow, like, this is just, you know, this wasn't something that was around before. This is really something else.
Great.
Looks amazing. It's just so pretty to look at, and
awesome.
The wafting, you know, it's just one of those dumb games where you could sort of stand on a rooftop and just sort of admire all this wafting sort of grass or sort of these bushes everywhere. It's really impressive.
Wow. I like a bit of that.
But it's like, I think that what I really like about it is the it really gives you kind of freedom of approach. You know, you have all the missions are pretty much kind of like, here is a location. You can kind of attack it from any angle.
Mm.
And it's kind of up to you to sort of like, do you just go barreling in on a Jeep and, you know, and just gun everyone down? Or do you sneak around and take everyone out? Mm. Or do you hang glide in from above? And it's, you know, sometimes it doesn't work out, but you don't really care because it's so much sort of fun just to sort of throw yourself at a problem and see what happens. And I think they've had a lot more fun with animals in this one as well. And I've not encountered all of these animals yet, but you can sort of like, it's probably a bit dark, but you can like attach C4 to elephants and things.
Yeah, jeez.
Which is a bit, yeah.
Have you encountered the dread honey badger yet?
I haven't encountered a honey badger. What I've mainly been doing is you can throw just chunks of meat at people, and if there's an animal nearby, it'll run up and like attack those people. So like, if you find like a patrol of men, you just throw some like meat at them, and then like a bear will come and eat them, and it's hilarious.
What do they
see? There was that mechanic in Blood Dragon, which I quite enjoyed, but you did get the feeling there was more they could do with it. Because, like you throw a lump of meat, and then do you have any kind of control over what kind of animal is going to respond?
No, not really.
It's just whatever.
But I could,
so you could
like
get
that,
some
like
really angry wasps.
Yeah, meat wasps. what I kind of like about it is whatever happens, is it tends to spiral out of control. Like, there's enough sort of variables that you can't kind of control every situation. So you kind of get an animal and it'll kill a couple of people and you'll be like, ah, ha, ha, ha. And then like loads of wolves will turn up and you're like, oh dear. Because all of a sudden you're like as weak as everyone else and you've got to deal with it. And you're like, you have to climb up onto like a shack while all these wolves are just running everywhere. And you're like, what am I doing? Yeah, there's still that kind of, yeah, you could, like, I was playing it earlier on, and I was on this hill, and I could see for, like, really far, and I had a sniper rifle, and I thought it'd be funny to sort of shoot a Jeep that was driving by, and it was like, ah, we'll see what happens.
Mm.
And you kind of get it, and it sort of escalated horribly, and all of a sudden there were loads of people, like, coming from different directions, like, they all just happened to be there, and you kind of look around, and you think, oh, no, what have I done? Like, you can't control, like, you can have fun in a little pocket, but you can't kind of control anything beyond that pocket. And you know, I think it kind of
well, it's a kind of game where I mean I did get a bit frustrated with 3, where I was doing my level best to move to the next mission, and for about 2 or 3 hours or something, I would just, things would happen to me on the way. It's just like you couldn't walk 10 paces without something attacking you, or troops going around the corner, or people going around the corner. But I think it's the kind of game well, 3 certainly wasn't played 4 yet, but 3 was the kind of game, like those pockets you talk about, Matthew, you could, and this is true for games like GTA as well, obviously, you could actually only see a tiny portion of the world and the game and still feel like you got your money's worth, essentially. It's kind of like,
yeah,
you know, you could just, even if you didn't make any progress, I think, you know, I've you know, the first time I played Far Cry 3, I never finished it because I just, you know, spent so long just, and that's sometimes true of Assassin's Creed as well. Actually, I just start like running around the city and looking for the side missions and just playing around and seeing what I can do, and sometimes when I go back to the main missions, that's the point where I'm sort of like, I've had enough now, you know. So.
Mm.
Yeah,
yeah. It's a hard balance to strike, isn't it? You almost have to curate that yourself, don't you? The mix between the main story stuff and the side stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it's very, very possible to just go completely off the deep end.
That's a very good point. Yeah, curate is a good word for that, actually. If I might find myself doing that.
Well,
a lot.
Mind how you go, Matthew, and I shall be careful to mind how I go when I get around to it.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's gonna be a lot of fun, though. I'm really looking forward to playing more. You occasionally get that thing where you stop playing a game and you're sort of slightly kind of sort of jonesing for it throughout the day. It's all kind of like, oh, I really want to try this, so I really want to try that. Now I've kind of got that going on.
Great.
Nice.
Well, thanks for sharing what you've been playing, guys. I really appreciate it.
No worries. Anytime.
You're welcome.
Anytime.
You've given me some good ideas what I'm going to play once I've finished the massive pile of Far Cry 4 stuff I need to do.
You're an editor of an official national magazine, Matthew. You're telling me you've got no idea what games to play after Far Cry.
Well, no, I have loads of ideas, but I was just humouring you, wasn't I?
Yeah, I can't see that the last story is going to be top of your list after Far Cry 4.
I love virtual hangings. Like, I really want to see that. Like, that's up there. That's like, you know, collecting studs in Lego and people getting hung.
In 8-bit graphics.
In 8-bit graphics, sign me up. But before you do this,
So as the final piece of the platform rotates and spins away into the endless blackness of beyond, it's time to bid you a fond farewell, listeners. Yeah. I hope you've had a good time on the platform. We certainly have.
I definitely have. It's been great.
We put some games.
I love the hour and a half of just turning endlessly. It's brilliant.
I don't get dizzy at all. I don't know about you.
Oh, you've taken one of them travel sickness pills.
Yeah, I've got one of those copper bracelets on that prevents any of that sort of shenanigans. It's great.
I've been sick 4 times since we've been doing this podcast.
Yeah, but in a good way. But yeah, four, like...
I hide it when everyone's guffawing at something. That's when I have my little sick.
Yeah. It's all part of just, you know, all part of life's rich tapestry, isn't it?
Coming out of Matthew's mouth.
If you want to be part of Life's Rich Tapestry, you can engage with us through all sorts of exciting social media platforms and stuff. You can email us at trp@therotatingplatform.com.
Yes.
You can, thank you, tick. You can send us tweets and stuff if that's your bag. We are at Rotating Podcast.
Yes.
Validated. And we're also on that there Facebook, and if I think it's facebook.com/rotatingplatform.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we also if you've got any a cappella game tunes, if you want to send us yourself singing songs, then email us those MP3s.
Yeah. Send us postcards when you've gone on holiday, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Selfies. Who knows? Whatever you fancy.
Yeah.
Right, it's time to blow this joint and draw a line under the whole sorry affair. So I hope you've enjoyed the podcast. We'll be back next week. Cheerio now. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Bye.